All right, let's dive right in, folks, to some Massachusetts criminal law today. Get ready to rethink what you thought you knew about hung juries and stalking.
These cases really expose the procedural details that can make or break a case, you know?
Yeah.
One wrong step and it all falls apart.
Like a big game of Jenga. Our first case throws us right into the action. Imagine a murder trial so tense you can feel it in the air.
Oh, I can only imagine.
The jury sends out two notes saying they can't agree. The judge is about to declare mistrial. And then, boom, some jurors say they actually did reach not guilty verdicts on some charges.
Oh, wow. I bet the defense attorney was ready to celebrate and then...
Yeah, like a rug pulled out. So can a jury undecide a verdict? And does this create a double jeopardy issue?
Great question. And the answer is, it depends.
It does.
Well, in this case, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court had an answer, and it all comes down to procedure. They talk about this thing called the verdict finality doctrine.
Okay, the verdict finality doctrine. So what is that all about?
Basically, it means a verdict isn't official until everyone agrees, it's announced in court, and the clerk writes it down. Like saving a file, it's not really there until you hit save.
So even if those jurors wrote not guilty on a piece of the paper, it wouldn't count?
Not at all. These procedural steps, they really matter.
Yeah.
And then there's the juror secrecy rule. What happens in the jury room stays in the jury room. Courts usually don't overturn a case because of what jurors say afterward.
Yeah, imagine the chaos if every juror could just change their mind after the trial.
Exactly. It would be a mess.
But the judge in this case did try to get a verdict, right? They didn't just give up.
Right. They followed the rules, even gave what's called a 2A Rodriguez charge. It's basically a little encouragement to the jury to try and reach a decision, but also reminding them it's okay to disagree.
Okay, so the judge did everything right. But what about those sworn statements from the jurors saying they did reach some verdicts? Doesn't that raise some doubt?
I see what you mean, and the defense attorneys tried that argument. But the Supreme Judicial Court pointed to a 2021 case, Commonwealth v. McCarthy, that shut that down. A verdict doesn't legally exist until the judge accepts it in court. Juror statements, well, they can't overturn a mistrial.
So it's procedure above all else.
Yeah.
But for our listeners, especially anyone facing a jury trial, what's the takeaway here? What's the big deal about the verdict finality doctrine?
This case is a reminder that every single step in a trial matters. Attorneys need to be on top of every detail, making sure everything is by the book. Any little thing could mean another trial.
Like a checklist, miss one box, and uh-oh.
Exactly. This case shows just how important those details are.
All right, so lesson learned, jury verdicts can be tricky. But let's move on to our second case, a deep dive into the Massachusetts stalking statute. We're talking about more than 40 letters, and not the friendly kind.
Yeah, these letters, they were full of threats and racial slurs and disturbing stuff. Just the number of them, it shows relentless harassment.
Sounds like a classic stalking case, but what's the legal twist? What were the tough parts?
Well, the defendant appealed his conviction, of course. He said there wasn't enough evidence to prove stalking. He even tried using a recent constitutional ruling. Thought he could argue the law itself was messed up, but the court said no.
They didn't buy it.
Nope. They upheld the conviction based on two arguments.
Okay, let's hear them. What was the court's thinking?
First, they connected stalking to common law assault. Both crimes, they're all about causing fear of harm in the victim. They cited a case, Commonwealth v. Musgrave, to support this.
So even if the defendant never actually said, "I'm going to hurt you," the letters themselves were enough to scare the victim.
Exactly. It's about context. The defendant called himself the stalker, and the letters kept getting worse. That met the standard of being reasonably calculated to cause fear. And they referenced Commonwealth v. Demine to back that up.
I see. It's the whole picture. But assault is usually one event. What's different about stalking, and how did the court use that difference to uphold the conviction?
That's where course of conduct comes in. One letter, maybe not enough, but 40. That's a campaign of harassment, a pattern meant to scare someone.
So the law is saying, okay, everyone has bad days, but when it becomes a repeated thing intended to mess with someone's life, that's where we draw the line.
You got it. That's why the stalking statute is so important. Harassment, it's not always physical violence. It can be mental, emotional, and very damaging.
Now, the defendant tried to use a new constitutional ruling to get his conviction overturned. Sounds like he was trying to find a loophole. Did it work?
No way. The court referred to the Mackey v. Commonwealth framework, which says new constitutional rules only apply retroactively in specific situations. The case must be on appeal, and the issue had to be brought up at trial. This defendant, he missed both.
Tried to pull a fast one, and court wasn't having it.
Exactly. And this brings us to the court's second argument, the statutory salvage doctrine. Part of the stalking statute was later found unconstitutional, but the harassment part was still good. They looked at the defendant's actions, messing with the victim's work, making her move, going on for years, and said, "This is harassment, the conviction stays."
So even though he tried using a technicality, the court used the valid parts of the law and applied them to his case. Interesting.
It shows how the court makes sure justice happens even when the law is complicated.
I'm seeing a connection between our two cases. Mm-hmm. They both seem to be about procedure, knowing the rules of the game, understanding the fine print.
Absolutely. Both cases highlight how important procedure is in court. Every step, every motion, every objection matters. Like a house of cards, one wrong move, and it all comes down.
I bet you have some real-world examples of how important these procedural details are.
For sure. Let's talk trial strategy. One thing, especially for defense attorneys, is asking for required findings on every part of a crime. It means asking the judge if the prosecution has enough evidence for every element of the crime.
So it's not just objecting in general, but being specific about each part of the prosecution's case.
Exactly. And why is it important? Because if the judge says no to even one element, the whole case could collapse. Like pulling a support beam out, the structure crumbles. And we saw in the stalking case, having those required findings is key for appeals.
It's about making sure everything is in place from the ground up.
Right. Speaking of solid foundations, remember meticulous record keeping. Every objection at trial, it needs to be documented carefully. Otherwise, like our stalking defendant trying to use that new constitutional ruling, some legal arguments become impossible. It's like missing a deadline, the opportunity is gone.
So lawyers need to keep track of everything that happens during trial. But let's go back to juries for a moment. Our first case showed us how fragile a verdict can be, even when a decision seems reached. Any other examples of things going wrong at the last minute?
Oh, yeah. There's a case, Commonwealth v. Floyd, where the judge dismissed the jury before the verdict was officially recorded. It shows how jury management is a delicate process, and even a small mistake can have big consequences.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Even a tiny error can change everything, so it's not over till it's over, and even then, you better make sure everything is documented and the judge accepts it. Like finishing a marathon but missing a checkpoint along the way.
Great analogy. It shows how important it is to be careful and pay attention the whole time.
Yeah, it's like society is looking at itself in the mirror and seeing how our laws show what we value. And those laws are always changing to deal with new things.
That's right. It takes discussion and careful thought and being willing to adapt as the world changes.
These cases also made me think about the power of words. In that stalking case, it wasn't just direct threats. It was more like the effect of all those disturbing words and the fear they created in the victim. Really shows how words can be powerful, you know, in both good and bad ways.
Definitely. Words can hurt. Words can make people do things. And words can create an atmosphere of fear. The law has to figure out how to deal with that, how to protect people from harm, but also keep free speech.
Like walking a tightrope. But these cases also show how important context is. The same words can mean different things depending on the situation, the relationship between people, and their behavior patterns.
Very true. The law has to be aware of the context and the subtleties. It's not just about looking at individual words, but about seeing the whole picture and how those words affect the victim.
Like solving a puzzle, you have to look deeper to find the real meaning.
Yes, exactly. That's why these cases are so interesting for anyone who's into the law. They make us think critically, analyze tough situations, and appreciate the complexity of the legal system.
And they remind us that the law isn't just some theoretical thing. It's about real people and real lives and real consequences.
Definitely. That human element is what makes the law so interesting and so important.
Well, everyone, we've come to the end of our deep dive. We've gone through hung juries, explored stalking laws, and seen how important procedural details are. We hope you found this look at Massachusetts criminal law informative.
It's been great going through these cases with you and explaining the legal stuff.
Same here. And to our listeners, thanks for being with us. We'll be back next time with another fascinating deep dive into the world of law. Until then, keep those legal minds sharp.